Alan, fifth straight win. Stayed patient, got the job done against Huntsley.
Yeah, I've just said in there, a bit clunky. I think there was a bit of nerves in us. Like, I think you can see a bit of nervousness regarding... we got in front, and then obviously they come back in, and then we went in front again, and we just didn't really play to our strengths, and we've been really good at getting to a certain point on field, and we was just a bit all over it, sure. But after time we spoke and regrouped, and we said, let's be better, because we need to be better, else we'll make it hard work for ourselves, and we were better second half. I thought we come under some try line D there, where we work hard, especially with Lee Gaskell and Billy Jowett in any team. They're a threat. And I thought we defended it really well. I think we did 4 or 5 back to back. So we'll be better next week for that. Much the so. So yeah, listen, we could pick loads out of it, but the most important thing was a win, and we're just glad we got it.
Were you pleased that you kept the composure? At no point did they ever look panicked or impatient, really. Whereas perhaps earlier in the season, a game like that might have made you lose a bit of composure.
Yeah. I'll be honest, I thought I've not seen Rooks as slow all year, and we speak at half time regarding that, and we just said we've got to fight more. If we fight more, we'll probably get a little bit more. And then once we started moving them a little bit more, we started fatiguing them, and then there was quicker rooks, and then, you know, most of our tries second half come from our own half, basically. So we knew Benno and Mike Bo, if they could get any kind of win for us, we'd play on back of him, we did. So that improved us. So you're much better in that area.
You made 4 changes at once in the first half, on half an hour, roughly. Don't often see that. Was that a planned move, or was that more a reaction of what was happening?
Well, it wasn't planned before game, but I think during the game, as we were playing, my middles were saying they were fine and stuff, and JJ was obviously fine. He could do 80 if we needed it, but I just felt as though there was coming to a part of the game. I thought, if 30 minutes now, we could just flip this and have a bit of an impact. We take a bit of a risk by doing it at once, but we're 10 minutes before half time, you're probably not. So we just said, yeah, let's do it. And I thought it worked for us, to be honest. And then we did very similar in second half when we brought Diz back on, and we left three, and then we put out 3 with 15 to go. So we tried to give our middles as much game time as we could. So yeah, it weren't planned, but at the time it felt right.
And Adam Lawton certainly made the impact that you would want from an interchange player.
Yeah. We want to keep working with him. We know his strengths. He's got a great tip. He carries the ball aggressively, and he's hard to stop. But he engages defenders, and then if he brings that tip into his game. So it was vital. I left him out a little bit longer second half, so I just wanted to fatigue him with a big game next week, and I wanted him to dig deep when he had to, and he did. But we just need to learn how to utilise it better, and we will do. He's new to us still, so we'll get there with it. But yeah, massive, massive impact for us. Especially that try where he scores when Ben Conlon takes a big carry front tap, and then we've got it shape, and he's in back row position there. So yeah, I thought he was really good with balling on.
You named the same 17, just a slight tweak with swapping Lewis Hall and Nick Gregson round. Where are you at with your squad at the moment? And
that was to reward the win at Fev, really, more than anything. Benty was available, Rodri Lloyd was, Gab Benyon. I mean, will we change this week? Maybe so. Edges in contention again this week. So 4 quality players there. Do we change it? Not sure yet. Really don't know. We'll go off watch the video. I thought it was right to reward them after that win at Fev, and it was really important that we don't take away the effort they did for the club. We just wanted to give Lewis Hall a bit more game time, because he's only just come back, and we know what Gregor's about, and we know he can play as long as we need him. So it was vital that if Lewis was called on, he got more game time. So that's the reason starting him. So we got 2 spells, basically.
Do you almost look at next week as a playoff game in itself, because you'd think that whoever wins next week's probably more than likely going to be in the playoffs?
Yeah, I do, but I know what London's about as well, so it's vital we've got to win this first and foremost, because Halifax played Doncaster last game, I believe, and I think they play, it might be over for them. I don't know how results go. I'm not looked at table, so that's not a thing at anyone. I just think it's vital we win next week, but once we've done that, it's got to be some game here, because they've nothing to lose, London. The Athletic side. And I think that'll be a real, real challenge for us also. So we need to win them both. That's our first and foremost. And we're desperate to win them both. I don't think it's a long time since we put 7 together in a row. Well, I've not done it here, but it'll be 7 quality wins as well. But we need number 6 before we think about 7.
There was over 3,000 in today. There was a lot of pre-game activity with the young teams playing. Winning always makes things feel more positive, but do you feel that around the club at the moment?
Yeah, we've worked really hard in in these last few weeks with this development stuff. So I went watching the under-16s at Frank Myler before the game. There was a good crowd on there, and there was a lot of under-15s, and they drew 18-0. It was a great game. And I come to the stadium, the 11s and 10s was on. I think there was over 30, 40 of those. Parents in, then our 18s, who 5 weeks ago played Swinton and got beat with 50 and then won today. It's just great to see. There's a real buzz around how we build the club up. And I think once you start putting good things in practice and getting kids involved, naturally, as a parent, you want your kids to enjoy things, and we need that club where the kids get a chance at this club. So then the parents come in, it becomes a family day. You know, you look at Lee Leppards, I keep going on about it, but how he's created that club there. He's thought of, it's got to be a family, it's got to be enjoyable. We've got to contribute to that. We've got to play well on the field. But slowly but surely now we're trying to build, which is really pleasing to see. So.
Hello, welcome to Widnes Rugby Chat, episode 27 of 2025. With myself, James Gordon, I'm joined by Mike Parsons. And we're very much heading into the business end of the season. This week, probably, well, almost definitely a do-or-die clash for Widnes, Mike, after a run of five straight wins, the latest of which was the 40-12 win over Hunslet on Sunday.
Yes, fantastic. I think regards, obviously, we've missed a week with the podcast. We've not had a chance to reflect over that fantastic performance at Post Office Road. I think, obviously, this week against Hunslet, it was more stay composed and get the job done. You know, you didn't want to, well, you didn't want to come off like Warrington did at the weekend against Salford. And, you know, it was a bit clunky at times in that first half, wasn't it? But, you know, Widnes showed the quality and class in the end and run out, you know, convincing winners. But it's going into this weekend, mate. It is do or die, isn't it? You know, I think, you know, if you don't win, Halifax go on 3 points above you with one game to go, and it means Featherstone have got to lose both of their games for Widnes to have a chance to creep in, and that's not gonna happen, I don't think, off one win at this stage, you know, with points difference. So yeah, it's do or die. And I think it's worth mentioning as well, given the nature of that Doncaster performance and, you know, getting beat by 11 men, you've got to praise the character, the belief and the mental strength of not just the players, but the coaching staff as well, to even have a chance of having things in their own hands with two games to go.
Well, yeah, certainly they've gone on a run at the right time of the year. I think if you look at the way, you know, we've seen teams win Super League, haven't we, off the back of getting on a bit of a run towards the end of the season. If Widnes do make the playoffs, they'll almost certainly have had to have won seven games in a row to make the playoffs. And of course, if you have won seven games in a row, that gives you a bit of belief going into the playoffs, no matter who you're facing. You mentioned Doncaster there. Doncaster are out the running now. Yeah. There is a bizarre way. They can only reach the playoffs if Halifax and Widnes draw, and then they claw back a 100 points difference on Halifax. And obviously Widnes lose next week against London. So Doncaster is pretty much out of the equation, which sort of makes it difficult for Widnes. Well, it doesn't really. I guess if they lose to Halifax, it's game over anyway. So Halifax's result in the final round won't matter, because if Widnes win this week, they know that if they beat London, nobody can do anything to knock them out of it. And as you say,
James, isn't it? And this is why we love sport, you know, for things like this. We spend a load of time talking about IMG, but this is what grips you and this is what you want to watch, isn't it?
Well, yeah, certainly you want to be looking at the... you know, you want to be looking at the ifs and whys and the ifs and buts and things like that. And it's just a shame that there's not more riding on it. But I think you mentioned Featherstone before. Now, there's no danger of it coming to a point where, you know, like you mentioned, if Widnes were to lose to Halifax, if Featherstone lost both their games and Widnes beat London, Widnes in theory could go above Featherstone on points difference, but Featherstone have got nearly 190 difference. So you'd have to have some hell of a scores for that to make a difference. But if Widnes were to beat Halifax on Sunday, a win over London on the final game could push Widnes above Featherstone if Featherstone were to lose. And don't forget, Featherstone got two tricky games. They got Oldham at home this week and then Bradford away to finish. And Bradford are, you know, they're still very much looking for points to keep the pressure up on Toulouse and also to finish above Oldham. So that's the position that Widnes find themselves in. But I guess no matter whether they finish fifth or sixth, it's getting into the playoffs is to do it for 2 years running would be, you know, people say that, and I'm of this belief that getting to the playoffs should be the minimum standard for Widnes in the Championship. But the fact of the matter is, before last season, it hadn't been done. So to be able to do it two seasons in a row would be a great achievement.
Yeah, I think it'd be a formidable achievement, James, in terms of how far back they've come from. You know, I think when we spend a lot of the podcast, obviously, we work our way through the season and we talk about the highs and we talk about the lows. We've spoke about, you know, the recruitment side of things. Several players have left. I don't think we entered the start of the season in probably the right balance or shape we probably should have. We've had an injury crisis in between. You know, results have peaked and dipped. But the bottom line is, seven games out, we've more or less buried ourselves. And the reality of the situation is, if you win all your games, you could finish fifth. And all of a sudden then, you're going into a playoff series where, if we're going to be in it, you're 7 from 7. There's no doubt about it. You go into that. Last year, I think, year one of making the playoffs again, I think we scraped in there. Didn't we? We went up Barrow, battered and bruised, and we got the job done, and it was a gallant effort. And we went to York, and, you know, York have kicked on, and quality team, don't get me wrong, but I think we was ready to bow out, and there was players on that field which, you know, was probably playing where, you know, if you had more players on the sideline, they probably wouldn't have played. They're sticking their hands up. Jordan Johnson, Martin Riley being two of them players. Callum Field, I think, was in that bracket as well. But this year, you'd be entering it where you're 7 from 7. And I don't know about you, James, but however it finished, whoever you're playing, you wouldn't want a side coming to you going into a playoff series 7 from 7 who's capable of bringing five coaches, which is going to Halifax on Sunday, capable of bringing five coaches worth of fans, trains full of fans, car full of fans, that getting that away attendance coming to your place, and you're the side who are expected to win and got everything to lose. I think if Widnes made it, I think Widnes would be the team that everybody I'd want to avoid. And I've got to be honest, mate, I know I said it previously just, but I will say it again, you know, credit to the coaching staff who have kept level-headed throughout. Credit to them, you know, players who have come in, you know, players like Morgan McWhirter, who's got better of every game has gone on, you know, Jack Bibby, I think he falls into that bracket. Adam Lawton and Ben Condon have been key. They give you quality at the right times. So I think it's an unbelievable achievement to be talking about at this point if Widnes have it in their own hands. I think it's a brilliant achievement, and I just really hope that they can get over the line.
Yeah, well, if Widnes were to win this weekend, they would have won 6 in a row, and that would basically be half the number of wins this season. So they only won 6 of the first 17 matches. And then potentially, as you know, depending on what happens this week, they'll be on about 6-6. And yeah, it'd certainly be a definite coming back off the canvas sort of race to the playoffs. Halifax have been a little bit up and down this season. They started the season really well, had a bit of a blip as we probably anticipated. I think they went 7 without winning at one point. And in fact, the only one game in that run they didn't win was the draw at Widnes. But in recent weeks, they've sort of found a bit of form again, albeit they've played Hunslet and Sheffield at home and they went to Barrow away and got a good win up there. They lost against Bradford. They lost against York. But it's worth noting that they've been playing the home matches at Oddsall. And this is the first game back at the Shea. And it's probably ideal for them to be back at the Shea for this occasion because you would imagine that their fans will be quite up for it.
Absolutely. You know, I speak about the five coaches and us going to have a fantastic away following, but there's every reason why the Halifax faithful will be packing out that home stand first game back from Oddsall. You know, they know if they get the job done, they're over the line. You know, they've had hard times in you know, recent seasons in terms of falling away to where they've usually been and then obviously off-field problems themselves. So I think it has the making, James, of everything you'd want to go to a sporting occasion, never mind the rugby league occasion, for both sets of fans, big attendance and get behind the team. It should be an absolute cracker. I'm looking forward to it. But I think in regards to Widnes, I think Halifax will be glad and it's timely that they're back at the Shea. I think Widnes will be happy it's at the Shea because I think our team suits playing on a Shea pitch than what it probably does at Oddsall.
Yeah, it's certainly a different beast playing at Oddsall. And of course, after Toulouse's win against Bradford last week, if you finish, well, depending on what happens between Bradford and Oldham, you could very much be looking at going to Oddsall in the playoffs, which would be interesting. Widnes got a decent record, won 7 of the last 10 trips to Oddsall, so who knows. Since we last recorded, there's been a couple of bits confirmed in terms of the Championship and League One are merging. I know we speculated on this. I think we recorded the night before the initial decision got pushed back for a week, but they finally announced that they are merging, which I'm certainly not a massive fan of. For those, it's not been confirmed how it's going to work, but my understanding is this. There's 21 teams across Championship and League One. And I have heard that the format is they're going to split it into 7 3-7s.
Right.
Based on where you finished this season, And you're going to play them 6 teams home and away. And then you're going to play another 6 or 7 teams home and away, which I assume is going to be based on geographic. Basically, you know, the Cumbrian teams want to be playing each other home and away, and I guess the Yorkshire teams that want to play each other home and away. But of the 21 teams, well, the 20 teams other than yourselves, you'll only play 13 of them. That, I might be wrong, that's my understanding of the current situation. So there'll be a 21-team league, but you won't play all the other teams. You'll only play 13 teams and you'll play them all home and away. That's my understanding of the current situation. Now, you're at the point where clearly Widnes, as an example, are going to be playing Featherstone and whoever's left out of the top teams home and away. Whereas if you're, say, Rochdale, you're going to have some games that are perceived to be easier. So it's going to be interesting to see how it skews the league table because there are going to be teams who have easier fixtures than others.
This is my massive concern, mate. Sorry to ruin your flow, but go on.
No, that's fine. Go on, mate.
So what we're saying is, potentially, you're going to have, at the top of the league or in a playoff series, not necessarily the best teams playing each other. You're going to have some of the best, but then some who've had the easier fixtures. So let's take North Wales Crusaders, for example. They'll get an easier set of fixtures. Now, if they heavily invest going into next season, hypothetically, they're going to have a five by far easier fixture list than what, say, a Widnes would have.
Yeah, that's like I say, it's not being rubber stamped as far as I'm aware yet, but that's my understanding of it at the moment.
So what's the end of the season look like, James? Does that then split off into a certain playoff series? Or
no, I think they're talking about top eight or even top 10 going into the playoffs, which is partly, you know, and that's partly the reason of having the playoffs is to, you know, if you've got a team who's got easier fixtures who by some miracle finishes fourth, but they're not as good as a team who finishes eighth, then the playoffs will work that out. But it's certainly going to be, I would imagine, well, I mean, who knows how it's going to work. I can see a situation where you're going to get to June, July next year and there'll be a crap team who are like fourth in the league.
No, that's what I'm thinking.
And there'll be someone, you know, struggling down the bottom who've actually probably might have only lost by 2 points to a few of the best teams who are way down the table. It screams to me that they're going to be begging to change it in a couple of years anyway. Now, I think the more I hear about what's going on, the more I wonder whether they're thinking maybe a couple of teams will jib it at some point. And I saw the podcast with Matt Ellis, the Wakefield owner.
Very good listen, by the way.
And I think he's a decent guy. I think Wakefield were handed a pretty favourable card, if I'm honest. You know, they were relegated, and they talk about this, oh, we dropped down and we rebuilt and all this. But let's get it right. They knew all along they were going back in instead of London. You know, and it was just they basically just had a parade in the Championship for a year to get all the fans back. But, you know, that's by the by. The situation is he mentioned about 16-team Super League. And I like the idea of that. He also mentioned about 16-team championship, which I think if you did that with both, to have 30 games might be borderline too many, but it's probably, well, it's, in a championship point of view, it's certainly better than having 20, you know, a team of 21. But ultimately, to get to 16-16, you've got to lose three clubs from the current 35. Now, if you were really cynical, you could identify two of them pretty much straight away, the two French teams. And then all they would need is for another team to drop out and you're down to 32. I'm not basing this on anything whatsoever. That was just me speculating based on what he said. And then basically have a full-time 16-team league and have a part-time 16-team league underneath. If that's what they're aiming for, I think that's not a bad, you know, I think that's quite a good aim to have. I think.
Yeah. I mean, you've always got to work towards something, haven't you? I'm just worried about the wreckage they've made in the second division in the meantime. And yeah, there's no guarantee of getting to that point either.
I think it's going to be terrible next year. I think it's great for the League One teams, and all the League One teams are buzzing because it's great for them. All the sort of teams that bounce between Championship and League One, it's great for them. At the moment, the teams who it's worse for are Widnes, Oldham, teams like that, Halifax, but they're being kept sort of quiet at the moment because they're all living in this fantasy that, oh, we might get Super League. So they've actually played a blinder because they've sort of pulled the wool over the eyes of the teams that... So basically what's going to happen is the teams in the middle are going to get shafted by Super League, and they've already been shafted to... Not shafted, it's a bit negative, but by the League One teams. Bear in mind, 18 months ago, they had a vote on this same thing and they rejected it.
Yeah.
So I think, in 18 months, they've changed their mind.
I think the one thing with this league structure, which I found out this week from a reliable source, and it needs sorting for your teams like Oldham, Widnes, and whoever stays with better away support. There's only Bradford who agreed to give Widnes a percentage of away ticket sales this year.
Yeah,
If we're welcoming, you know, these League One teams with open arms, or, you know, as much as, there needs to be something rubber stamped in place where there's something in place of your witnesses, for example, potentially taking 500 fans to Rochdale or Swinton or North Wales Crusaders or wherever, that, you know, there's a financial reward for witness for doing that, because you're not going to get it the other way around.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably more difficult to do that these days in terms of, you know, back in the day, they used to send you a book of 500 tickets and you'd sell the tickets directly. But I suppose there must be ways they can do it. Well, there are ways they can do it online. It's probably not as foolproof, but I don't think it's going to go well. I might be wrong, but, you know, we'll have to wait and see how it pans out.
For what it's worth, for me, I understand there's got to be a long-term vision and things have got to change. I completely get it, you know, and quoting Matt Ellis, you know, aiming for 16 teams, I think in the long-term future, that's right. I don't not disagree with that. What I cannot understand for the life of me, bearing in mind we've had all season, is we are implementing a league structure that we already know is unfair and corrupt, and where teams finish won't replicate how good them teams are. Now, I don't follow every sport in the world, but I imagine this could be up there, if not the most unfair league system there is in any sport. And what makes it even worse for me is, as a product, in terms of year in, year out, of coming to the end of a season, usually the playoff race in the championship is the most exciting league out of them all. All right, we've had teams run away with it at the top, but how many times has it gone down to the last day? A couple of years ago, we had three teams that could have gone down to League One on the same day, and it come down to, you know, results. And we've just ripped that up, and you've gone from the best league structure and the most competitive league for the majority of it to probably the least.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not... Like I say, it depends what the long-term plan is, if you believe there is a long-term plan. I do think one of the issues Super League has had is that it's had 12 teams. Well, it started with 12 teams in 1996. It's 2025. It's still got 12 teams. They had a brief, 6 years with 14. I think it's been proven that they can't handpick the best 12 teams, that or the best 12 clubs. I don't think that will ever work. So the only way that you're going to grow it is by adding numbers to it. And like I say, if they've got a vision, and it'd be better if, rather than trying to do it, you know, at very short notice, come out and say, right, we want Super League to be 16 teams by 2032.
Yep.
And we want the championship to be 20 teams, you know, or whatever it is. And at least then have some parameters that people are working towards, because the championship can go one of two ways, can't it? You either get a group of a new group of teams, an additional group of teams, so you'd have to add 5-6 new teams to it, or you lose 2 or 3 to make it more manageable. I think that's ultimately what they're going to look at. Now, clearly, if Super League expands to 16, that's 2 fewer that would be in the championship straight away. I still think there's massive question marks over the French involvement, whether you agree with that or not. But yeah, I think it'd be good if there was a It'd just be nice to know there was a plan looking forward, because I just don't see how anyone can operate at the moment with, you know, it's like they're not going to come, you're not going to know until October 16th what division you're in next season, basically.
And this is the problem, mate, where I'm struggling to get on board with this straight away. And, you know, you've obviously highlighted how you feel. And the massive underlying thing in the room is we could get behind it if you was guaranteed that it's going to look like this at a certain point. But nobody listening to this podcast, nor me or you, believe and trust the people who were implementing these ideas that that's going to definitely happen. How can you? You know, the track record of you know, rugby league in the last 20 years regarding league structure has been a borderline embarrassment and diabolical. And that's where you struggle to buy in, because, like I said, there's no trust or guarantee of getting to that point.
Well, you look at the game on Sunday against Halifax. Now, I'm sure it'll be an exciting game. But in terms of the tension and the passion and things like that, it would be far greater if you knew that that game meant something. Yeah, okay, it means something to get into the playoffs. But if you knew that come Sunday, it, you know, it's 16-all or something, and you go close to the corner or you score a try in the corner, the elation at making the playoffs and having that Super League dream still alive, or that promotion dream still alive, is far greater than this sort of situation now where you're like, oh yeah, we got in the playoffs, fine. Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. You never know, Widnes might make it. I would love to, and Sheffield went through this 10, 15 years ago. I wonder what it's like and what it feels like as a team to win that championship grand final and it basically not mean anything. I know that they get 100 grand now and, you know, oh, that's great, whatever. 100 grand for the club, great for the club. But does it really feel the same as it did? You know, think about them times when Widnes lost the grand finals to Hull KR and Cass, you know, and how heartbreaking them games were.
Here's a question for you, James, sorry. Has everybody missed an obvious opportunity of, once we knew that there was going to be two teams handpicked to go into Super League, with the playoffs going as it is, if there was a team who won the championship that was in a position to put in a Super League application, if they won that championship final, that guarantees them a Super League place as long as they put in a Super League application?
They should have just...
For example, for Widnes, if we did the unthinkable, then you have got that dream.
They should have just done that. They should have just done that for next season. They should have just said, we're going up to 14 teams. The two teams that win it next... the team that wins the grand final will automatically get one of them places. And another. But what the problem is, they're terrified of like Featherstone winning it. They're terrified of that happening. You know, and that's the problem. It all comes down to they want to choose who's in. They don't want a team getting in. You know, it's like Toulouse as an example. They only want Toulouse in on terms that suit Super League. And like I say, whatever your opinion of the French teams, whatever. If you make it a clear shootout based on the pitch, in theory, anyone could win it. And I think that's the problem, is ultimately the reason it's happened is because they've decided they want Bradford in. And York are obviously the flavour of the month at the moment.
I mean, the chances are one of them two teams, you know, they've got a strong chance of doing it anyway, but I'm just thinking...
I think, for the argument,
and whoever else, you know, there was an opportunity to get a bit of respect back for the game and the IMG and from the supporters of going, right, one of them two places is going to the grand final winner. And all of a sudden then, you've elevated something.
Well, if you'd have done that next season, imagine how much more teams would have recruited. Imagine how much driving they would have done selling tickets and, you know, right, big push for Super League. You know, it would have just been a massive, massive boost for everybody. In some ways, I hope Bradford win the grand final.
You're on your own.
It'll stop. It'll stop all the.
Yeah.
I think Bradford will almost, you know, it actually might hurt Bradford because if everyone starts saying, oh, you're only in it because of Nigel Wood, that might be like a cloud that hangs over them for years. And obviously, if they do go into Super League, you want them to be able to do well and compete. But what you mentioned Widnes, what is really interesting is what happens even this season. If Widnes or Oldham were to win the grand final, you would have to say that even if they win the grand final, I think it's very unlikely that either Widnes or Oldham would be chosen.
I'd say at that point, you'd think, being cynical or whatnot, even if the decision hadn't been officially made, by that point, people who are making that decision know who's in and who's not, don't they?
Yeah, but the point I'm making is it would be interesting to see what the fallout would be from fans of fans of other clubs. I suppose you could argue when Widnes came in, Featherstone were the best. I think Sheffield won it that year. I can't remember now. Featherstone were by and far the best team and Widnes went up. But that was a decision that was made sort of a year in advance and there was all this going on. Whereas you're going to have a situation where on Sunday, and like I say, it's unlikely to happen, but let's say on Sunday, Widnes or Oldham win the Championship Grand Final, and then the following day, they're going to announce that two Championship teams, maybe even three Championship teams are being promoted, and not one of them is the one that won the competition the following day. But I think Rugby League got so insular that actually no one else is bothered. No one else would even bat an eyelid over it because that's how anonymous things have become now.
Yeah, This is the thing, you know. I say it comes back to, you know, trust of the supporters. That's been lost. You know, people have almost give up on it. You know, we talk about it, you know, every couple of weeks, and because it's current and that's what we're here to do. But you listen to people outside of it talking day to day. You know, they've give up on that excitement. They've give up on that. On the league structure, and you know, you speak to people about this current league structure now. Going back to that, it's, you know, there's no faith that's going to last. There isn't, and that's the massive problem that the game's got at the moment. Is it's not the people you've already lost. The people that still go are disengaged with the game, and it's so dangerous. It really is, because let's be honest, the game is, you know, struggling financially as it is. And, you know, if you can't attract and get trust of new supporters and not retain the ones that you've currently got, if they don't get it right this time, I worry where the game's going to be in 5 to 10 years. And I really, really worry of where it will be in the second tier, because you go a lot of the away games, James, as I do, and you go to a lot of these League One teams and the teams at the bottom of the Championship, and even at Widnes now, and the majority of the supporters, I'd say, are 40, 50 plus, and you add another 10, 20 years onto that, and crowds are just going to keep dwindling.
Yeah, and I think, to be honest, I think Widnes' away support is much less than it was maybe five or six years ago. And like, Widnes are one of the best supported teams, but even looking at Widnes' away support, I don't think there's anywhere near as many people who go than compared to who used to go. And like you say, it all comes down to that. There's not a hook to keep people in. Clearly the coverage of the league isn't great, but there's no hook, there's no dream, there's no, you know, think about before Widnes went into Super League the first time, everyone was down because they missed out in 96. But ultimately you knew, you know, they got to the playoffs, got beat by Hunslet one year. But you knew if you got to the grand final, you were there. Super League was there. And I just think that that's what's missing now. Certainly for the clubs outside, unless they manage to turn it around and make, and as I said earlier in the year, unless they make the championship worth winning. But I just don't see how you make it worth winning to Joe Public fan. Yeah, you can make it so the club gets £1 million if they win, but a fan is not bothered about that. Do you know what I mean? The average fan isn't bothered if the championship grand final winning money was £1 million. The fans aren't bothered about that. They could make it £10 million. A fan's not bothered if you've won the second division. It's like, oh, well, we've won the second division. What does that mean? Can we play in Super League now? No, you know. And I think that's where the game's really struggling.
I think if you went to a team, if you got the ideal of, say, 16 and 16 or where you got two tiers, I think you would have to drop in there if the grand final winner would have to have a criteria of, you know, if they won it, are you financially sustainable, X, Y, and Z? But it'd be great to have it back on the table, a one up and one down system, if that team passed all that basic criteria.
I've seen some mention of maybe there being a playoff between whoever wins and whoever finishes bottom at some point. You know what I mean? And I don't mind that as an idea.
Salary cap and money comes into team could be spending £1.2 million more. And for me, if you finish bottom and have a bad year, you finish bottom.
That is a big problem. But on the flip side of that, if York were to play Salford this week, you know, you would give York a chance. Bradford have beat Cass this year. Widnes gave Warrington a decent game in a one-off game at the end of the season. As much if there is a gulf, the chances are if a team's finishing top of the championship, they're a decent team. Do you know what I mean? It's not.
Well, you've got to think of if you had 16 at the top tier, and at that point you didn't have French teams as well, hypothetically. What is the standard of that second tier?
Well, I think that's the problem. I think that's ultimately what causes the problem, is that you've clearly got a load of elite teams who want to be full-time. You've got a load of teams who are all, you know, like your Batleys, who are always going to be part-time. The problem has always been these clubs in the middle, the likes of Widnes, the likes of Lee, even Hull KR were in there, Halifax. Teams that, if the circumstances allow, would be full-time, but the circumstances don't allow. And I think the problem you have is that if you basically said we want anyone who wants to be full-time goes in one league, you'd probably get about 20 takers, I reckon. But the problem is you can't do that. And I think that's what... But the problem is then is that instead of just having a part-time league that, you know, and I might have a massive gulf between them, I have the full-time league is the super-duper league and the part-time league is the championship, you know, crack on. They can't have that because they've got to accommodate these in-betweener teams who effectively lift up the... You know, the reason why the salary cap in the championship's as big as it is to enable... In the past, Lee and Toronto and Toulouse, them teams to build a team that can compete in Super League.
Yeah.
The following season, like Lee wouldn't have done, if the championship salary cap was a realistic level, like it used to be, like say if it was £500,000, Lee wouldn't have been able to do what they've done because they wouldn't have been able to recruit the players that they did. Like they wouldn't have had John Asiata playing, you know what I mean?
You can't have relegation either, can you? Because that you could have a team that's spending 1.8 that'd have to shed 1.3 million worth of players. Then, wouldn't you?
I'm less bothered about that argument because I just sort of feel, you know, like people you say, oh well, if they get relegated, everyone becomes redundant and they've got mortgages to pay, and it's like, yeah, but that's life, that's sport. You know what I mean? That's what happens.
That's trusting owners to sign contracts properly. For example, you could have a player on marquee money and it don't say in his contract they can't go, and then all of a sudden they got to keep paying him then on a salary cap of they might be earning more than the salary cap.
Well, I mean, you'd have to get something right. I mean, it was like when Widnes signed David Peachey and obviously had to play. They signed him and then he ended up playing in National League One and he was earning a wedge and only lasted half a season. I think got rid of him and signed three quality players to replace him. Listen, who knows what's going to happen, but Widnes put out a statement to say that they are applying for Super League. They did say that they were going to put something out after the Hunslet game, Mike. I haven't seen anything. I don't know if it was mentioned in the Bridge Suite.
And Stuart Murphy took the stage. Obviously, there is still time for things to be released and stuff like that. I haven't personally been down to the club this week, but I can certainly message him, chase things up. But he took the stage and said, you know, well along the way with the application process, they are serious. And, you know, obviously, you know, they're confident in what they're doing, which has kind of already been said anyway. I think at this point, other than what the club have already said, there's not a great deal more you can really announce about it, really. You've just got to submit your application, haven't you, to the best of your ability, and obviously let the powers that be deal with it.
Yeah, I have heard on the great... I've heard a murmur that the club are trying to arrange a press conference. I'm not sure when that will be, but I have heard a murmur that they're trying to arrange something, so that would suggest that they do have something to announce at some point in the near future, which may or may not be relevant to the Super League bit.
I imagine it will be, and what I'd say is, you know, it's down to the club to do it in their own time, and I didn't know that information regarding the press conference, but that doesn't surprise me, and if it is... Now, obviously, everybody stay tuned.
Yep. Right, predictions. I've made a decision, Mike. I've made a decision.
Here we go.
I'm no longer going to predict the Widnes games.
Is this because you got to interview Alan after it?
No. Nothing like that. I'm not bothered about that. But I used to have a thing where people used to ask me, I never used to predict Widnes games, and it's only because we started this that I've started predicting them. And it just goes horribly wrong most of the time. So I've made a decision that I'm not going to predict the Widnes games anymore.
So what you're going to do then? You're going to make 4 points up from somewhere, mate.
Yeah, well, it won't be on Widnes games. unless I just register them as a Widnes win, which, by the way...
Sorry, mate, quickly, before we go into it and stuff, like, because it was such a fantastic win, and I ain't basking in the sun here. We don't have to mention the fact that I predicted us to do it and I was confident we were going to do it. But what was your thoughts on that?
Someone tweeted me, actually.
First time since 2011. What a performance it was, James. Come on.
Someone tweeted me saying you were right, and that gave me the ump. Widnes were very good. I thought Widnes were very good at Featherston. It was a really mature performance. It was a performance from a good team. I actually thought the score probably wasn't even... I think the score wasn't even generous to Widnes. I think Widnes probably were worth more than what they won by. I thought Dan Murray was very good, especially in the first. Because, you know, you looked at the Featherston team and you thought the pack is big. They just did some daft thing. I thought Featherston did some daft things, but I think that was partly because Widnes were getting in the face.
Yeah.
You know, I think they made a couple of bad calls and bad errors, but I think that was... Like I said, I think it was because of the way Widnes played. I thought they, certainly in the first half, taking the chances that they did, and the smart play by Tom Gilmore and Jack Owens, taking them chances when they did, playing up the hill, was important.
I think you mentioned the hill there, James, and I think there's obviously, you know, Batley's renowned for the hill and famous, but that hill on the Featherston pitch, it ain't far off, mate.
Yeah, you're right, and I suppose the fans might not off. Well, I don't know what it's like. I've never actually... I can't remember if I've actually sat in that one behind the post since they built it. I've stood at that end, but I can't remember whether I've ever sat in that one. Obviously, I sit side on, and it's a serious slope, that Featherston. I always used to remember, I think it was around about time Jamie Rooney was playing there, you get a penalty at Featherstone going down the hill, and it felt like they were kicking it for like 60 metres. You know, like...
Well, did that pattern miss touch going downfield?
Yeah, you know, games at Featherstone were always games where I used to say penalties decide matches, because you'd concede a try, they'd get a penalty, and all of a sudden they'd be on your line again because they kicked it that far down the hill. But it was a really good performance. I think I said it to Alan. And the Hunslet game was okay. Don't get me wrong, witness. They won it comfortably. But the good thing about the Featherstone win was that Widnes have been getting better and better every week. They might have to go up again next week against Halifax, but I think that's what was good about the Featherstone game was it was almost like, yeah, it was a good win at Barrow the week before, but the Featherstone win was even better than that. And now they've got a bar to go at when they play Halifax this week.
Yeah, and just to add to what you said there, you highlighted Dan Murray and, you know, did a piece in the week on the Witness Forum about him, and I'm glad Alan highlighted him because he's made such a difference. He was one of the most important recruits we've made, I think, in the last couple of years. He is our pack leader, but such a nice, nice guy, but goes about his business the same every week. You know, no nonsense. Does the things that people don't notice. Alan's highlighted is, you know, his second efforts from Marker and, you know, his high work rate, and probably is the first person to tire because of how much, you know, he puts into his opening stint. And, you know, you talk about players of the season and man of the match performances, and usually it's a back who scored a try or snatch it, or Adam Lawton's grabbed two and gone over. But don't underestimate the work Dan Murray does in his stint. I think he's been one of the smartest signings Witness have made in many a year, to be quite honest.
I've mentioned this on commentary a couple of times. He's actually got the longest unbroken run of consecutive games now in the professional rugby league. He's played 56 or 57, I think, off the top of my head, games in a row.
I wonder if he actually knows that stat.
I'm sure he's probably not that bothered, to be perfectly honest.
It's good to have next to your name, though, isn't it?
But yeah, no, it is. It's a good durability stat for sure. I think when they got to 50, I've not looked for a couple of weeks, but they were on 54, and him and Lachlan Lamb were equal. Because actually, Tom Gilmore was up there in, I think he was about third or earlier on in the season. There was a few others. I can't remember who it was now. Someone was on 70 odd. But obviously they've come to an end. Gilmore had got up to 60-odd.
That's a heck of a feat, because that's where you're most prone to be injured, isn't it, really?
Well, and, you know, in this day and age as well, suspensions.
Yeah.
You can't imagine many Super League front rows go 50-odd games without getting a ban, to be perfectly honest, the way it goes in Super League. Right, let's sign off with these predictions then, Mike. This week, only 5 games to predict. We're not predicting Widnes. Well, you can if you want, but you're not having the point. London.
Can I just say, right, I won't predict it, but I was confident before the Featherstone game, I really was. I don't know why, and I can't explain it, but this is the game that gives me nerves.
Oh, God. Well,
So that's what I'm saying, but I reckon we'll do it. In typical Widnes style, there'll probably be a bit of drama involved along the way.
A good old friend of mine used to ask me before every game what score, like literally, you know, before kickoff. And I always used to just say to him 100-0. I think I've told this story before. And I used to just say 100-0. And that goes back 15 years because people would ask me all the time. And I just don't know, because your heart reels your head. And, you know, I think you could ask me and I have no idea. And I've been a bit like that for most of this season with it. So anyway, but we'll see how it goes. I mean, if Widnes are 5-1, like they were at Featherstone, I'll definitely be putting a pound on.
Well, I didn't know. You could have told me them odds when we was predicting.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I only got on it by accident myself, to be perfectly honest. But when I saw Widnes were 5-1 to beat Featherstone, it was, that was off scratch, quite remarkable. Anyway, Saturday this week, London against Bradford. London, nothing to play for except pride. Bradford can still finish top two, but it's out their hands now because Toulouse have leapfrogged them.
If we get past Halifax, London is no gimme. Make no mistake about it. I think Kobe Ruglas has just signed there now, and they're bubbling along nicely. It's a bit of an awkward fixture because they've got nothing to lose, even though the season's over. But
They'll all probably come up to Widnes for they'll have a night out in Liverpool or something. They'll all be focused on that.
I'd say Bradford win, mate.
Yeah, I think we'll both go Bradford. Toulouse against Batley.
Toulouse, sorry, John Keir, but apart from an unslip performance, they've whimpered a little bit, haven't they? Obviously, James Ford's going to be there next year, which I thought was a bit of a shock, actually. I thought that was quite a catch for Batley, to be fair.
I don't rate James Ford as a coach. In my opinion, but I don't know anything. Toulouse's last game's Hunslet away, so I think it's fair to say Toulouse are finishing in the top two.
So
we're going for Toulouse to beat Batley. I'm just checking who York's last game is against. No, York's last game is against Batley, So I think it's going to be York top, Toulouse second. Bradford have to beat London to keep Oldham away. The only plus for Bradford is that Oldham have only got one game left, which is this week. They don't play in the final round. And that game for Oldham is away at Featherstone.
Not this week, sorry.
Yeah.
Featherstone and Oldham. I think Oldham have overcooked it, bringing in too many players. And I think they brought in one too many. I think they've upset the apple cart a bit and they had a bit of decent momentum. And you've got this change if they're trying to go bigger for next year. So I think they've got a group of players who are going to be setting off elsewhere next year. I'm going to go Featherstone.
I'm going to go Oldham because I think Featherstone are shot. I think Featherstone will lose both their last two games. And so I think if Widnes do make the playoffs, I think Widnes will finish fifth.
That's calling the podcast, that, isn't it?
That's where I'm at.
That's your Widnes prediction, then, is it?
Yeah. Doncaster, York.
York for me.
I think
Barrow put the dagger into Doncaster, didn't they, a couple of weeks back?
Yeah, it's mad how that one result has basically just killed Doncaster off, and I think that's what's being mad about this run of fixtures is. In some ways, I'm a little disappointed that Widnes' season's over this week if they lose because it almost feels like they won against Barrow, they won against Featherstone, and I suppose I made that point with the Featherstone game. If Widnes had lost at Featherstone but then beat Halifax, they still would have had a chance. Do you know what I mean? And that's how it depends on the games that you win. If Widnes had lost at Featherstone, they would still have. I mean, it wouldn't be in their hands as such. They'd be reliant on Doncaster beating Halifax in the last game, but they would have still had a chance. I suppose you can say that they've got a better chance now. It's just completely in their hands, but it's do or die. But yeah, York will beat Doncaster. This is a mudslinger. Hunslet against Sheffield.
Crikey, you might have to pay people to go to the ground. I think Hunslet have given some free tickets out, haven't they, actually?
I didn't mind Hunslet so much. I thought they did all right.
Do you know something? I've got to give them a little bit of credit, actually, because I do agree. I think Billy Jowett's a great player, by the way. I thought Lee Gaskell, you know, looked really good as well at times in that game. They've had the best players put beneath them mid-season. I know Lachlan Hennigan, he's not signed anywhere, but, you know, he was a massive player for them, scored a hat-trick against us in defeat. But what I actually quite liked about Hunslet, to give them credit, not just, I thought the fans were great as well, but He was a bit unorthodox, weren't they? I like the short kickoffs and stuff like that. They had nothing to lose, but they give it a go, didn't they? And they digged in and they made it tough. And they did a few things, like I say, unorthodox was probably the word, and made it awkward for Widnes at times. And I think, you know, despite being absolutely caned in the penalty count, if they could have controlled that, they'd have been well in the game.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be fair, they were 8-1 down at half time on penalties, and they were only 4 points behind. So you're thinking, well, if they'd have been able to curb that in the first half, who knows where they'd be? They just stayed competitive. I never thought there was any danger of Widnes losing the match, but I just thought Hunslet dug in the game. They stayed competitive. The try they conceded off the short kickoff probably killed them. But for that reason, I'm tempted to say maybe they'll beat Sheffield. But I think Craig Lingard's a decent... despite what's happened at Sheffield this season, I think Craig Lingard's a decent coach. And I just think, does he allow his team to lose to Hunslet? I'm not sure he would.
I think as for Sheffield, they're a different kettle of fish, aren't they? They're in a bad place as a club. You know, the city... Fans are at war. You've had the Mark Aston situation, and like to throw into the mix, you know, we've talked about player turnover. There's been numerous outgoings at Sheffield and players coming in. You can only think there's budget cuts coming because a lot of them have come from League One, a couple from Keighley, you know, and obviously players heading to York, and you know, Jack Walker, I think, is the latest one, hasn't he? He's popped up at Salford. So I don't think you can judge any coach for coaching in them circumstances. I still think there should be, if both teams play to the best, Sheffield should win. There's more quality in the Sheffield team. So I'll go for Sheffield on that basis. But there's more spirit in that Hunslet team. And I think on the whole, they can be proud of their efforts in the Championship. They finished fourth in League One, so probably shouldn't have even been in the division. And if they keep the nucleus of what's left there and add a few next year, you know, they might look back on this season as a mini success, Hunslet, despite finishing where they are.
Well, the irony is that Hunslet only got promoted because they were trying to get the structure right. The last idea they came up with was to run with two leagues of 12. And then have a Super 8 competition. They were the reason why Hunslet ended up in the Championship was because they were in the middle of sorting that out, and then they moved the goalpost. But I'm going to go Hunslet, which means potentially, I could claw 2 points back this week, or I could fall 2 points further behind.
Do or die, mate.
That's where I'm at. Mike, thanks as always for your company. Thanks everyone for listening. Do drop us a message on the Widnes Rugby League fans Facebook page, or get us over on Twitter. But we'll see you next week.